Ready?
Sound speed.
Gamma rolls.
Reverb Alpha, take three.
Okay, here we go. And have fun, everybody. Rocking and rolling, and action.
Coming to you from their small but charming living room in Baltimore, it's Maria and Mark Unger, co-creators of the hit indie show Thespian. This is Married with Web Series.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our very first podcast episode.
Yes. Yes, Married with Web Series
podcast
is a thing. You know, I get confused. In fact, sometimes...
I just got really confused.
I've actually, like when I was setting up our account, I set up an account for a podcast called Married with Podcast.
Yeah.
Because I got that confused and wasn't sure what it is. Well, we're off to a good start. Let's start with our total and complete confusion.
We're nailing it. We're doing a good job.
So, what we're going to be doing, if you're a fan of our show, Thespian, which, by the way, you can watch on Amazon, although no longer Amazon Prime, and I'll probably share that. The frustration with that. You know, everyone should just drop Amazon. Just.
I
have anger towards them.
Think we should say that, though.
I know, because maybe there'll be an opportunity, and we're going to be the next Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I don't know how to exist in a universe, babe, where, like, I have to be so conscious of, you know, potentially burning a bridge, which might explain why I, you know, don't have the career that I'd like to have. But
you can also watch us on YouTube,
so, and we like YouTube. That.
Yeah,
and you know, anyway, I'm gonna get off the Amazon topic.
Okay,
I'm not even gonna talk about the river. Anyway, yes, you can watch the show on YouTube. In fact, subscribe to the YouTube channel. We're trying to build our subscribers there. The nice thing about YouTube also is we can add bonus content whenever we want to.
Yes.
And on Amazon, we couldn't do that. Once the show is uploaded, that's it.
You have to wait for it to get approved.
Well, it's not even possible. I mean, once you've got all the episodes, even before, I mean, you couldn't add bonus. You couldn't add trailers. You couldn't add bonus content. You couldn't do any of that stuff. Amazon would put commercials in front of our show for their other programs.
Well, they do that on YouTube,
but they
too.
Were never putting...
for advertisement.
Well, that's different because that's you actually get paid for that. I don't want to talk about it. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
So the podcast, we'll talk about season three and what's coming up for season three. You know, we've all been through this just... sad, tragic, awful. I mean, I would just be using negative adjectives, but you know, a year and a half, it almost feels like
time blip.
It really, really does. You know, I think back, you know, because my life is all related, like my timelines are all related to Thespian because we're so immersed in it.
Right.
So that's all I, you know. So we finished, we were almost finished wrapping season two. We had like 2 weekends to go.
It's February.
We had shot in February mm-hmm. of 2020. We were set. We had the date
mm-hmm. at my
to
school.
Shoot in March.
At my school.
You had the keys.
Yep, I had the keys to my school that I teach in.
And then the pandemic shut everything down.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, we were able to finish the season. We shot a weekend in August. This was, of course, under strict COVID protocols. Mm-hmm. And
we had COVID officers.
We had a COVID officer, had a little badge.
Matt. Mm-hmm.
COVID guy.
He did a great job.
And these were protocols that were put out by SAG that if you were a union project, you know, you should, and you know, rightfully, you know, you had to... adhere to these guidelines. So we were able to shoot for a weekend in August of 2020. Then we probably would have shot again in September and or October if I hadn't almost died from something I didn't even know. I'm not even sure I knew that there was such a thing as hepatitis A.
I didn't. When they told me, I literally said, "What is that? I don't know what that is."
But since I got it, now when I mention to people,
it seems like everybody knows about hepatitis A.
I've only heard of hepatitis C.
Right. That's the one with needles usually or whatever. But anyway, so I almost died of that. So we ended up getting the last weekend of shooting in December of 2020. Then we had to release. So meanwhile, we had been releasing the episodes. We never got to have that. The joy of you know, like
the release.
Of a release party, you know, of a celebration, you know, when we finished
crossing the finish line. Yeah.
Right. When we finished season one, we had a big screening of all 8 episodes. You know, there was a couple hundred people that showed up at Magoobie's Comedy Club in Timonium. And it felt like
we all got drunk.
We all got drunk. We all had fun. People told us how great the show was.
That was great.
But with season two, everybody's mind. So I guess my point is I'm really kind of excited about and trying to emotionally find a way to get my focus back.
For season three.
And, you know, to just start moving forward. You know, but because there's still always that fear that we all have because you've got idiots who don't want to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
There's that was this fear that, well, things are going to shut down again. What's the point of even, you know, starting to shoot because who knows what the hell's going to happen?
Yeah.
But that's in my head. Like it is time to start making stuff again.
You got to start sometime. If you don't start now, this isn't going anywhere for a long time. COVID's not going anywhere for a long time.
So we got
to start.
Right. And that's what we're going to be doing. You know, and part of the hope for this podcast is each week we'll be able to give you an update on, you know, what's happening with season three. You know, we're still kind of in the very early stages of
planning
the season. I mean, I've got a lot of notes. I have started writing the first episode of season three.
You've got good ideas.
Which is called, the episode will be called Breaking Protocol.
Mm-hmm. Get it?
Are you mocking me?
No.
Did you just say get it? In that little quiet little half Filipino voice?
I did.
Get it? You know, but then, you know, we'll start putting together we'll need to start putting together the financing, crowdfunding again, you know, all these things that help make Thespian happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really looking forward, you know, and one of the hard things, and I've had this conversation with people, like, do you, if you're creating the new season of something, like how much of the pandemic and quarantine and masks and, you know, death, or certainly, you know, hospitalization, like how much of that are you going to have in your show, whether it's Thespian? You know, I started watching, do you know the show Billions? You've seen me watch it.
I've seen you watch it, but I haven't actually watched it myself.
Yeah. Well, you know, they got shut down their latest season because of COVID, and then they were able to pick up shooting and finish the season, and they introduced COVID.
Right.
But they did it in this kind of really lame way. Like the first episode, when they post quarantine or whatever you want to call it, you know, there was like one speech about, okay, if you're not vaccinated, you're fired. And then it was like basically just the show again.
Well, I mean, honestly, I think you shouldn't beat people over the head with it. Everybody's living the horror in real life, and I don't think when people are looking to their favorite television show to escape, they actually want to sit there and watch more COVID death, you know?
Right.
That's not why we watch TV. We watch TV to escape our horrible life. So.
Yeah, so there's a, but because I think conversely, though, you can't just pretend it didn't happen. I mean, you know, let's look at our show. Let's look at Thespian. So clearly, you know, and we don't want to give away a lot of spoilers for season one or season two. You know, if you haven't had a chance to catch the series yet, we want you to do that. But so I'll just say that at the end of season two, there's a scene that makes it very clear that two characters will likely be doing a play together in season three. I'll just say it. Who cares? I just kind of...
We had a whole conversation. No spoilers.
Okay, well, I'm spoiling it. Here we go. So at the end of season two, my character, Adam Kellner, and Petra Antonelli, played by Sasha Carrera, sort of coincidentally turn up at an audition in New York for a play, a kind of an off-Broadway play that that's what's called a two-hander, meaning it's just a two-person play about a man and a woman who just happen to be their age. So it's clear when Petra says to Adam, "Hope you get it," and Adam says, "You too," that, you know, the assumption is, because that would be bad writing, like if it's like it's never addressed in season three and it's just, "Okay, hope you get it, hope you get it," but right, so it's pretty clear that that's deliberately setting the table.
Definite foreshadowing
for season three. Okay, so now, because of the pandemic and, you know, the time blip, season three will start roughly around now. So we're talking what? We're talking a year and a half since we last saw those characters.
Yeah, well, maybe a little earlier than now.
Right. Okay, maybe it's a few months earlier, mm-hmm. Yes. But it's definitely, you know, vaccines have arrived.
Yes. Yeah.
People are getting vaccinated.
Yes.
That's when season, you know, that's the time period, the time frame that season three will start. So, okay, so we know that Adam and Petra didn't get to do their play, you know, there was certainly a postponement period, right? Or did it end up being a Zoom production, which we're not going to do that.
No.
So our decision was that, yes, they will have done the play, or, you know, we're not going to see the rehearsal process. Episode one will likely start like on opening night of that play. But so there's a lot of things. And then we have to start thinking about the various characters and how their lives were impacted by, like, I don't think in season three, or we haven't really talked about this, but I mean, do we think that all of the characters from seasons one and seasons two, because, you know, we had a lot of great characters in season one that I've thought about maybe bringing one or two of them back in season three. Like, has everybody escaped unscathed?
No.
Because that would be ridiculous.
And where's the fun in that? Somebody's got COVID.
Where's the fun in that? Did you just say COVID and fun in the same sentence?
Well, where's the story?
I think that's the better phrase.
We'll edit that out.
Yeah. Okay, but okay, so fine. They had COVID, and there's a reference to them having COVID. What about deaths? Did anybody not make it? Anybody in the...
Well, that's another way to, you know, sometimes we have a hard time with schedules, and sometimes people can't come back, so we can blame it on COVID. This is how you use COVID to your advantage.
Oh, wow. You just wanted to have us just edit out the entire episode.
Yeah,
let's just see how much you can mock COVID.
Can we start over?
No, we're not. This, you are going to learn. Look, I did radio for a lot of years.
I'm a podcast amateur. I'll do better.
It's okay. It's fine. So the point is, though, that these are the questions that we have to wrestle with. Like, you know, is there a character who is an anti-vaxxer, you know? And then, you know, all the social and political upheavals of the past year and a half. I mean, not that Thespian was ever meant to be or should be a political show.
No.
But the thing about Thespian is it lives in a real world, though.
But it's not, there's no real focus on political anything.
So, I mean, the point is that these are all the kind of decisions that we have to make as we're writing the season.
I'm just really excited because, I mean, we've talked about this, but in my head, you know, Petra and Adam have everything to gain, and I want this season to be where they have a lot to lose. So we start off from a place where they haven't been yet.
I don't quite follow you.
So seasons one and two is Adam and Petra's struggle to come to grips with the current situation that they're in. They're, you know, they're looking for work. They can't get work. They're trying to get their next part. And now I feel like when we open season three, they've had some success. And,
because they're doing this play.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, they have the taste of that success finally. And it's exciting for them. Exciting for their fans, too.
Yeah, but obviously that can't, you know, that can't, things can't stay that way, because otherwise you'd have no conflict.
Well,
hey, my life's great.
Right. But that's where the conflict comes from, because now they have something to lose.
Because of the success they're achieving.
Right.
In New York.
Mm-hmm.
For me, one of the big kind of ideas that I want to explore in season three, you know, season one, season two, the series, and by the way, if you're listening to this and you don't even really know what Thespian's about, which I guess is possible, it's about my character, Adam Kellner, who at the start of season one, it's his 50th birthday. He's been a stand-up comedian for a long time, and he's kind of realized that his career is kind of flatlined. He's living across the street from the apartment building he left 25 years earlier to get out of Baltimore, to start his career in New York and then LA and all that. And he's married. He's very happily married, but, you know, his career is just not going anywhere. So rather than just give up completely, he decides to reinvent himself and go, I shouldn't say reinvent, he decides to go back to his roots as a serious actor. And Sasha Carrera's character, Petra Antonelli, who you meet in the second episode of season one, is somebody from Adam's past, an actress that he knew when they were both in their early 20s. They had a brief kind of a fling, and then Petra becomes kind of a major character throughout the rest of the series. So now here we are at season three. Even though they're doing this play in New York, you know, it's still Staten Island. So, I mean, it's not like they're on Broadway or even off Broadway. So I don't know if, you know, things are going as great as maybe you would like them to go. But for me, the important thing is I would like, at least for one of the two characters, because I feel like when you get to be that age, basically my age, and, you know, and babe, just to be honest, it's something that you'll experience 20 years from now, you know, our age difference.
Yeah.
You know, you view the world, rightfully so, or to be expected, a little differently than I do, just because of my age and your
sure.
age and my experience and, you know, all the failures that I've had that thankfully you hopefully you'll never have. But so you get to a certain age, if you're going to keep looking back at your past and try to recapture something that you had 25 years earlier, whether it is, you know, this eternal optimism or, you know, you're really successful or you know, you're young, but you're on the cusp of being really successful. You know, for Adam and Petra, they're both, you know, they were both really kind of big deals locally in the Baltimore acting community. Then Adam went on to bigger things outside of Baltimore. Petra did that. Now, you know, here they are 25 years later. No, you can't spend your whole life just looking backwards, is my point. Like, at some point, you have to make peace with where you are in life at this moment, right? You can't, and I find myself doing this too often. It drives me crazy. Where I think about, you know, I see so-and-so on a television show. I'm like, oh, yo, you know, I knew that guy and I could have. There's a lot of mind games you can play with yourself. I would like to see Adam, because I don't think it'll be Petra. I don't know that the Petra character will ever find true peace. I mean, maybe. But if I had to bet on which of those two characters has a better shot at being comfortable with the now, do you agree with this? It's probably Adam.
I have a hard time thinking about If I had to put my money on one of them, I would say Adam, but I have a hard time seeing Adam finding that true peace also.
You know,
but if I had to put my money on a horse, it would be Adam.
And it's not like once Adam finds that piece, or Petra, or both, the show is necessarily over. It's just a question of learning not to live in the past and be comfortable in the moment. And maybe that speaks a little bit to what you're talking about with the idea that, hey, they are doing this play in New York. It is what Adam wanted. Well, you have that. Mm-hmm. So shut the hell up already. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's not shut the hell up. It's moving forward. It's right. You know, it's just unproductive to continue, like you said, to continue looking back at what once was and could have been.
And then it'll be really interesting to see like what's going on. Like as a writer, it's really fun when your characters kind of dictate to you what they would like to do in season three. Like I've got people talking to me in my head, characters. Eileen Kellner, who was played by Susan Linsky, who's Adam's sister. His brother, Brian, Chuck West. Like, I can't wait to figure out where Chuck West was for the year and a half that everybody was kind of shut in watching Hulu promos.
Chuck West, played by
Christopher Walker.
Who we'll probably interview at some point on our podcast.
Yeah, I mean, the goal... Or getting back to that, yeah, we plan to have a lot of cast and crew on for interviews. In fact, later on in this episode, we'll be talking with Michael Patterson, who plays Wendell Stack. If you remember from season one, Adam meets him at an audition for the role of Detective Shiflet, and Wendell is sort of this very classically trained...
Stone-faced,
Shakespearean actor, yeah. Very religious... Although he has a little bit of his soul kind of broken down in season two.
Yeah. Oh, poor Wendell.
Yeah. So we'll be talking to him here a little bit later on in the show. But yeah, the idea is to get cast on, crew on, and also, you know, other filmmakers,
mm-hmm.
Other people,
other projects,
writers, directors. If you are making something, or you have made something and you want to come on the show to talk about it, to talk about the process of indie filmmaking, you know, email us at thespianseries@gmail.com. And we would love to have you on. If you're in the DMV, which, by the way, I didn't realize at first that DMV was DC, Maryland, and Virginia.
I knew you were going to say this.
It's true. I thought it was Delaware, Maryland, Virginia.
Yeah.
But now we know.
And now everybody else knows.
I've known it was DMV because I didn't live here for so long. I wasn't in the DMV. I was in, you know, crappy LA for
not that there's
years
a, there's nothing wrong with Delaware, by the way. So just, but it's just not what it stands for.
It almost feels like Delaware is not getting its fair shake. Like, I feel like it should be DDMV. Like, why isn't Delaware in that? I guess Delaware is considered part of the Philadelphia market, maybe.
I have no idea.
I don't know either.
But I am from Delaware. I will throw that out there in case anybody cares.
Aren't you actually born in Salisbury, Maryland?
Yes, but I grew up in Delaware in Rehoboth Beach.
Yes.
Lewis Beach. Dewey Beach. All of those beaches. I grew up on all of those beaches and never in Salisbury.
So Thespian Season 2 is making the festival circuit. We've been very successful so far with... getting into festivals, and you know, it's a crapshoot. You know, you're sending entry fees to places and just hoping they're legit. Like you have to really do your research. You know, I know there are people that get really excited because they get to put a bunch of laurels on their projects.
Hey, I get excited by that
poster. Yeah, but I mean, to me,
everybody likes a ribbon.
You know. Okay, example. There's a festival called the Minnesota Web Fest, which is in the Web Fest community. It's you know, considered a really great festival, and we submitted, we got in, we were nominated for Best Dramedy, nominated for Best U.S. Web Series, and then I got nominated for Best dramatic performance as an actor. And I won. And so, of course, I posted about it on Facebook and Instagram because it's good marketing for the show, I guess, for Thespian.
And for you.
I didn't feel anything. You don't believe me. You think I did feel something.
Sure.
Okay. Maybe I didn't feel enough. Like, I didn't, like, I'd like, okay, you know. So somebody had to get it.
Is it because you? Is it because you would rather have won for best dramedy?
It's well, that's part of it. I would rather the show win awards, and I still believe it's the best dramedy. So the fact that we didn't
that goes without saying.
Right. And by the way, if you have a web series, and you should think, right, that you are the best in the category.
No, not all. I don't think all web series should.
Because they're not very good, you're saying? Or, but don't you think as the filmmaker, well, okay, I don't understand what you're saying, not even a little. She talks in code, folks. You don't know this about my wife, but she has her own kind of code.
I think that some shows are good, some shows are not, and I think, I don't.
Yeah, but I'm saying
everybody doesn't deserve a trophy.
I'm not saying that.
I misunderstood.
I don't believe in participation trophies. No.
Okay, I misunderstood.
What I'm saying is there's nothing arrogant about thinking you should have been picked as the best of this or the best of that, even if you weren't. What I'm saying is, as the person making the film or the series, you want to have that belief in your work. Now, you might be delusional but I don't think there's anything wrong with feeling that way.
No.
But see, here's a problem that I
think there's always room for growth that you should be aware of.
Yes. What I'm not saying is, you know, you should look at your work and say it's perfect. You should never do that because everything can be improved. You know, you should constantly be striving. I mean, the greatest artists of all time are always striving to find some higher ideal. The thing is, for me, I've always been opposed to awards for art.
Right.
So I feel a little hypocritical when I start posting about the awards that we're winning, because I am inherently against that process. I don't think there's any way one piece can be judged against another.
Right.
It's so subjective. And that's not just true about acting performances. I'm talking about that's true about pretty much all of it.
All competition-based.
Yeah.
Programs.
So,
well,
I want our show to get into film festivals. I only want it to win awards because there's a, you know, it gives, I'm blanking on a very, very simple word because I'm an old man and I've lost the ability to communicate properly.
Sounds like. How many syllables?
It gives you, oh, this is such a simple word. Like right now, people are listening. They're all yelling it. I get, they're in their car going, it's that word.
Recognition?
Not status, gravitas, but there's a much better word, a legitimacy.
Okay.
A legitimacy.
Okay.
But you know, ultimately, the reason why we enter into festivals is because we want to increase the reach of the show. I mean, of course, if you've spent as much time as, you know, we have, living with Thespian and making Thespian and writing it and editing it and getting it out there. And we owe it to everybody else who's been a part of the of the project to do all we can to get it out as far and wide as we can. So that's one of the reasons why you want to do a film festival. Excuse me. The other reason, big reason, is maybe it'll lead to something.
Sure.
And that's the tricky part.
So when has that? And this is my question. When has that
actually happened.
It does. But
can I have a real life example?
Go to Sundance. It happens all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, kind of the first, as I remember, the first film that really kind of almost created the wave of indie film, not didn't create the wave of indie filmmaking, not by any stretch. I mean, Cassavetes was doing it way before this. You know, Steven Soderbergh had the movie Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And that movie was made for pretty much next to nothing. And it went to Sundance and it created Steven Soderbergh. It made his entire career. And that's always been kind of like, at least in my generation, that's the example that everybody always, you know, everybody kind of raised. Okay. And then the indie film thing became really big with like Clerks,
mm-hmm.
Ed Burns movie, Brothers McMullen. But now, and this is a separate conversation from web series because that's a whole nother thing, but in the film world, even the quote unquote indie films aren't true indie films. They have name actors. They already have deals in place.
Big producers.
If not on board, close to being on board. It's just a much different scene. So now you're talking about a web series where, you know, it's made for next to nothing. You're competing against, because now anything that's not on ABC, you know, a network is technically a web series, right?
Yeah.
It's a streaming series.
Right.
So you're competing with major, major name talent and mega budgets that you can't compete with, right? So when you're going to these festivals and you're interacting with other content creators, what's good about it is you become part of
the network,
of a community,
mm-hmm.
of people who are they're all making art for the sake of arts, for the art. We all want the reward. Let's not kid ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about making the art. If you go to these festivals thinking it's going to put you on the map, you're probably deluding yourself. I mean, I hate to, you know, but that's the 50-something-year-old. I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, young 20-somethings who they think they're going to go to, you know, the Janesville web series festival.
I'm right in between. I'm a happy medium here. Right. No, so, I do see the value in broadening your network and increasing your contacts and your support amongst other artists.
And you never know where a relationship's going to pay off. You know, that's always been, like, I've never been great at that at any point in my career.
Relationships?
Well, until I met you, I was bad at those kind of relationships too. I have deep friendships.
Oh, keeping in touch?
No, giving a shit about your kids' names.
Oh.
If I don't really like you. Like, I know people that are so good at, like, hey, how's little Timmy? You know, you don't even know this guy really, but somehow, you know, you have like an index. Well, it used to be like a Rolodex or something. I just used the word Rolodex.
Yeah.
I am so old. It's unbelievable. But there are people that are very good at schmoozing,
mm-hmm.
You know, networking. Pretending that you matter to them, even right. if they don't even like you or know you, and I'm terrible at that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying is you're terrible at being phony.
People don't call it phony because, in a way, it's not. See, I view it as phony, but it's not. Oh. It is how business happens. Business relationships and creating and networking is a part of any business. And I think that I've always been so caught up in pretending that I'm an artist. It's a business.
Well, you are an artist.
But it's the business of art. You know, like, quick example, and we should probably get to a break and to our interview.
Michael.
When I first started stand-up, if you handed out business cards as a comic, or if you sold merchandise,
like CDs.
Actually, when I started comedy, were there even CDs? Yeah, there were CDs. But if you did that, or T-shirts,
do comics still sell CDs?
can I finish my story?
Sorry.
And then you can throw off my train of thought.
Sorry.
The train leaves very quickly. Okay. In fact, it's gone. It's at its next stop.
If you handed out business cards
if you handed out business cards, or if you had like a catchphrase, mm-hmm. you know, save up or whatever. It's like people have different catchphrases. Somebody that was there, I don't remember who, it was somebody's catchphrase. You were considered a hack. Oh. If you had a business card, you were considered a hack. And then I stopped doing stand-up for like 5 or 6 years in the early 2000s. And when I came back to it, like, what? You're not on MySpace? It was MySpace though.
I remember
Facebook
MySpace,
and yeah. Instagram and all that stuff now. So the networking part of it, the social media followers, that is the business these days. Anyway, do we cover what we wanted to cover?
I think so.
All right. Either way. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will be joined by Michael Patterson, who plays Wendell Stack, and the great interview that was recorded earlier. We'll be back.
If you haven't yet caught the show or want to binge watch again, check out Mark and Maria's award-winning web series, Thespian, Seasons 1 and 2, now available free on YouTube. Just go to youtube.com/THESPIAN series and subscribe to the channel for exclusive bonus content.
We are thrilled to be joined by Michael Patterson, who plays Wendell. Actually, you know, there's confusion, Michael. I wrote the character. I don't know if his last name is Stack or Stacks.
Stack.
I believe it's Stack.
I think it's Stack too, but I'm pretty sure in the credits there's times where yes. I've called him Wendell Stacks, which is really a sign of complete unprofessionalism. You know, I don't even know who the character is. So how you been, man?
Been good, man. Been a little busy, actually, filming, which is good. I'm not
you're
complaining
always
about
busy.
That.
Like, yeah. You're the one person, like during the pandemic, you were still like, I got 5 films today.
I didn't say that.
Booked it. Always booked it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. But we were doing some guerrilla shooting, obviously. But, you know, we just decided to go ahead and move forward with just knocking it out because of, you know, cost. You know how much it costs to do a production. So
and to be clear, I was kidding. I wasn't saying that Michael was doing anything inappropriate in terms of filming when he shouldn't be filming. You know, and you know, at some point, and in fact we've already talked about it, I don't even know half the time what we've talked about earlier, but you know, COVID protocols and all the things that we had to deal with, you know, for SAG projects, and then
right.
hopefully even the non-union projects were adhering to some, you know,
oh absolutely
code,
safety,
you know,
precautions.
Safety precautions, right? Exactly.
Yes.
So Michael, when did you start acting, like, at a very young age? Like I did my first play when I was like 8. Did you go that far back, or did you start later as an actor?
I went a little close to your age. I was at 12 years old. I was on a stage doing my 6th grade play called The Wiz, and I played The Wiz.
Booked
it, and I was scared. I was scared to death, but everything was well. I was taught well, and ever since then, I said I wanted to be an actor. Ever, you know, even with being athletic, I still wanted to go back to the roots of being an actor, a thespian. So, yeah.
So were you like high school drama club guy, like that kind of thing, or
no? Yeah, I became a thespian. Did my workshop on Crucible to get your thespian points. I don't know if y'all remember how you had to do that back in the day.
Yeah, there was the Thespian Society or something, right?
Right, yeah, something like that. Yeah, I don't remember, but I remember getting my thespian points to say that, hey, I'm a thespian, a high school thespian, and I thought I was somebody.
You also acted in college or no?
Yes, I did. I did a lot of stage plays, a lot of off Broadway, a lot of modeling, and I auditioned for a lot of short films, actually, that were like, you know, like I would say experimental or just, you know, back in the day type films, and never landed any, but everything was basically theater. And they were just, you know, just homegrown type plays. I just stayed active as an actor while I was an athlete to make sure that I never got away from it. but I never did anything major when I was in college.
So what was some of the first, we talked about The Wiz, but like, you know, as you got older, you said you did a lot of stage work. What are some of the plays that, you know, really roles that really resonated with you, really challenged you?
Let's see. Let me look through. Cause it's not recently, but, A Raisin in the Sun.
Oh, wow.
I did that. George Washington's Boy, which was a stage reading with Ted Danson. I'm not Ted Danson. The black guy from Love Boat. I forgot his name, with the handlebar.
Ted Lang.
Yeah, forgive me for that. And then I did a lot of stage gospel plays, church type plays and stuff like that. I would say one of my main impactful stage performances was this play called Bound and Gag, where I played in a very abusive husband who was an architect, who was a lovely guy in the eyes of everyone else, but I was a monster at home. So I played that role, and we did about like 6 or 7 weeks of that show. And I always had to be escorted by a security guard because I was very believable as that character. And it was
really
real.
Had anger towards you.
Oh, man. Yes. I had older ladies hissing at me, literally, like people throwing things at me. And I was like, I did my job.
Would you say that was a challenging role for you? I mean,
it was very challenging.
Further from your actual character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was very, you know, I had to, my kids saw some of my rehearsals and, you know, I had to say, hey, look, you know, I had to explain to them that this is not Dad. You know, when they were younger, they were much younger. And so it was something that was impactful. I knew that I had like a range as an actor in the beginning. And at the same time, you know, it was a challenge because I had to portray someone that was absolutely ruthless and evil. And at the same time, it was also an awareness for, you know, spouses that are being abused by individuals that are, you know, narcissistic and just hateful and angry. And so it was some work.
did a role like that present any sort of like deep moral conflict for you? I mean, you know, as actors, we want to be challenged. But at some point, as you pointed out, and actually we can talk, this kind of applies to Thespian too, our show, you know, you were playing this monstrous character, this abusive, monstrous character, which goes completely against your Christian beliefs. Uh-huh. How are you able to reconcile those two things?
We're prepared for the role.
Yeah. Just prayer and at the same time, just understanding that I'm doing something that is promoting awareness for individuals that are going through it right now or during that time. And I just said that I'm doing something to speak out against it. And I just always thought about something positive because, I mean, really, the show was really bad. My character did some terrible things once that, and I brought it to life, you know, and I used a lot of things where everything that I hated about what a guy would be towards his family, I became. And I used that as the motivation of not becoming ever. And at the same time to help get into character. And it went against every single bit of moral that I had as a man, as an actor. And I advise that, you know, when you do a role like that, give yourself some time to take a break from it because, you know, it can literally start changing your life. It really can.
So talk a little bit about your process. You know, some people are Meisner technique or, you know, what, you know, they have Stanislavski, Strasberg, whatever it is. Do you have, like, I'm kind of a pick and choose guy, like, and I definitely build a character sort of from within. Uh-huh. Some people approach it the opposite way. What's your process for a role like that and roles in general?
Roles in general? Okay, so mine would not be a process where you sit the Meisner or method acting or anything like that. I do a lot of studying of other actors. I look at a number of films that inspire me to give myself an idea of what I want to do for the character. And then I would rehearse. I would transform it to the individual. I guess it's some kind of method, I guess, but I would transform it to the individual.
More of a research method.
Yeah, a research method. There we go. And I would look in the mirror and I would do different faces. I would take three or four different people that impacted my life. negatively and positively, and I will use them in each one, each, you know, like take, I guess. Yeah. And to see what, you know, what comes out of it, what did I like best? And then I would have individuals that are actors, you know, colleagues that would say, hey, I like that one better. Or I like this one, you know, and then we have a discussion and then I would come into my final person that I am to become that character. And then I would rehearse and rehearse and rehearse and, you know, just transform into that individual for that, the purpose of filming, of course. And then, you know, try to deflate out of it and get out of it and become Michael again. You know, so I guess it is some sort of method and research at the same time.
So. Sure. And of course, obviously, as an actor, you know, the director has such an important role in helping you shape your performance, particularly in film and television. What do you look for or hope for from a director? You know, you get on set, you know, maybe you've met the director, maybe you haven't met the director. What do you look for from a director?
I look for a director to be absolutely honest. You know, I'll you know, give him or her my, you know, a perception of what this character is. And then I want them to be brutally honest. And like, for instance, you're brutally honest when it comes to directing individuals. You're like, hey, Mike, I want to take it this way, or, you know, and you talk personably, you know, you're a personable person and you're very approachable as well. So I look for people to just be honest, brutally honest, actually, and give me, you know, like the negatives first before the positives, so that I can change into what the director's view and perception is of this character. And you've done a lot of that for me. I'm not trying to, you know, brown nose or anything like that, but you're one of like the best directors I've ever been under concerning how you make an actor or you know, or an actress approach the character.
He's just trying to get season three.
He's already in season three. and we'll talk about that. You will definitely be a part of season three. You know, it's a testament to you as an actor and you as an individual. You know, so Thespian can't get much more low budget. I mean, we do a lot with what we have.
It could get more low budget.
It could. We could do stick figures. Yeah. You know, so you come in, you know, I had written that scene, the ship, which, you know, I guess now is known as the Shiflet scene for season one. And you were cast to play opposite me in that. And by the way, you were so perfect in that scene. But in a way, it was sort of like a standalone scene. You know, it was Adam. It was I just wrote it as this funny.
Yeah. Funny games. Know,
Adam's take on the acting world, and then this really serious kind of thespian Shakespeare, studied at Yale in the Wendell Stack, maybe Wendell Stack's character. And you nailed it. So now we get to season two. Marie and I knew, hey, we really want to work with Michael Patterson again.
Like I said, it's something special. I knew from the season one that I was like, this is going to be something special. Like, it's really good. And I just love you, the husband and wife team, if I can say that on here. How
sure.
Thanks.
Y'all are. And y'all are like brother and sister to me, literally.
You know, you mentioned that, you know, you watch a lot of film. You study a lot of other actors. Who are some of your favorite actors or actresses and why?
I'd say Keanu Reeves. Denzel Washington.
You know what? I'm just going to be, you said I'm brutally honest, so I'm going to be brutally honest. Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, man. I like his nonverbal, I guess.
It's because he can't talk.
Well, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't say that, you know, like when it comes to his dialogue and stuff with other actors and stuff, I think it's just like his nonverbals, his attention to direction. I just like the way he does that. Ever since Point Break, I like him in that. It's just, I'm an action guy, so I guess I'm being a little biased when it comes to action. You don't have to really be a great actor to be in action, but I just like the way he, you know, obviously he's very successful in action.
Yeah, so what the hell do I know? I mean,
you know, you've actually done some stunt double work, haven't you, Michael?
Not for Keanu Reeves.
Let me clarify.
All right, cut. Why is the black guy standing in for Keanu? I think there's been a mistake on set.
Right.
Makeup? Yeah. No, that's terrible. So who have you stood in for?
I've never stood in for anyone. I apologize for miscommunicating. I just do my stunts.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I have auditioned, of course, for, you know, like stand-ins for major player actors, but that's never happened. But I've done all my stunts mostly, in the films that I've done when it comes to action, martial arts, or anything like that. So Keanu is that type of guy also that I look up to because he does most of his stunts, as well. Gradually,
you know, how crazy our industry is, this business that we're in. I was just thinking what I said before about Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
And, you know,
he might hear this.
I'm an actor, but I'm a writer, whatever, but you know, comedian. So as a comedian, that's where the brutal honesty comes in. Like, that's just like what you do as a comic. But I did just have this fantasy in my head where somehow our project Thespian gets into the hands of his production company.
He's talked to me somehow. On Facebook before. Keanu Reeves has talked to me on Facebook before.
What do you mean, Keanu Reeves?
Oh, really?
Cheating on me with Keanu? What?
No, he commented on a post. I commented on a post.
What did he say?
I think he made it just give me a thumbs up. So he didn't actually talk to me.
Because, you know, he's not really a Matrix guy. I will kick the living shit out of Keanu Reeves. We're the same age. He's a little taller.
He's not really my type.
Oh, good. So, but no, what did he comment on? I want to know more about this.
I told you about it. It was so long ago, and it's a very boring story. It's something to do
with. Well, apparently it's not that boring because it's still stuck in your head, your Keanu Reeves love affair.
Uh-oh.
Let's talk about Denzel Washington. Hopefully he's never commented on my wife's status updates. So Denzel, and I agree with you there. What I was saying before about Keanu Reeves. So I'm sure, because I know my luck. I know how my luck in this industry. At some point there will have been an opportunity that Thespian could be bought by Keanu Reeves production company, but he's going to hear this interview and we're screwed. But let's talk about Denzel Washington. I think he's one of the greatest actors. Okay, he can be one of the greatest actors. I mean, I think Denzel Washington's one of those guys, you know, there's that thing about being an actor and being a movie star. Right. And it's very difficult sometimes. You're not allowed to step outside that or too far outside that movie star persona because that's what's selling the tickets. So sometimes I feel like Denzel, he's got to do the Denzel thing. But when he really brings it, I mean, he's mesmerizing. I remember there was a movie that came out. It was actually based on a stage play. The play was called A Soldier's Play, I think. The film was called that's the name of the film.
Okay.
I think the play was originally called A Soldier's Play, but let's just call it A Soldier's Story because that was the film. And I remember seeing that. It was like mid late 80s. I had kind of just started really acting, you know, professionally, meaning outside of high school or summer camp or any of that stuff. And I remember watching his performance. Nobody knew who this guy was. And he was amazing. And that film is one of my favorite films of all time. I can watch that film like every time that it's on. I'm assuming you've seen that movie, right?
I've seen it once or twice. Yeah, it was impactful, absolutely, and just the way he portrayed the character was crazy. It was good.
And Howard Rollins, who plays the lead in that, is from Baltimore. You know, he was a guy that had, you know, a whole brilliant career in front of him, and unfortunately, I think he had some substance abuse issues, and you know, ultimately he died really young. But he was great in that as well. All right, so we should probably wrap this up here soon. Any projects coming up, Michael, that you want to talk about?
I had wrapped up a feature film where I play a con artist, acting like a pastor.
Wow, for a guy who's so religious, you really like playing the bad guys, don't you? I think this religion thing might just be a front.
So I play that. That's my first major feature film. That I start in as the lead actor in that. So, you know, and I play a con, and who plays my wife is Sharon Lanier. She's a really a nice big actor as well. She just got back from Italy for doing the promotion of her film. I forgot what the Cedric the Entertainer. She plays Rosa Parks in it. And I forgot the name of the movie, but it's doing pretty good right now internationally. So her and I being the headliners for a really good team of individuals nice. That are in it as well, actors. I think it's going to be pretty good. And that's going to come out in February. We'll have a trailer coming out sometime in December, but February will be our premiere for that. So I just got finished doing that. And I have a series called Perfect. The series. I think you are one of our fans, actually, Mark.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We just did two more episodes, and they're small.
Is that with Cadell Cook or no?
That is correct. Yes,
with Cadell. Yeah, Cook. I like his work a lot. He's a talented guy.
He reminds me of you, man. Like y'all, when you write your script, you put a lot of thinking. I'm not saying others don't do that, but you put a lot of meticulous things in your script that make a lot of sense, and they also hide other things. There's other layers. There's layers and layers of things, and so I love when I'm around writers and directors that do that type of stuff. It excites me as an actor when I'm on set getting ready to, you know, show the vision of theirs to the world. So we just finished doing episode 4 and 5, which is on YouTube. And it's pretty good, man. It's wholesome. It's family oriented, but it's got a lot of drama at the same time. But I'm proud of it because it's about father son relationships that are very small in nowadays in film and TV, where we need more of the father and son connection, so that so that our country can stabilize. Sure. Father and sons are very important relationships, and we don't have a lot of that now. So I'm very proud of that series, and it talks about love, it talks about reconciliation, it talks about responsibility, accountability, and stuff like that. So I'm really proud of that series if you want to check it out.
Episode 4.
But yeah, those are some of the things that are happening. And
where can people find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram at actor_MichaelJPatterson, and you can find me on Facebook, Michael J Patterson. Very easy name. There's a lot of Michael J. Pattersons in the world, of course, but you'll see my big head on there and you'll be like, oh, there's the guy with the big ears. And, follow me, friend me. Those are like my handles right now.
Great. Well, hey, Michael, thank you so much for being on our podcast, our inaugural podcast, and Michael Patterson, our first guest. Great talking to you, man. And we will see you soon somewhere. I haven't quite figured out. I know that the Adam and Wendell relationship was really nicely developed in season 2. And we want to make sure that somehow Michael or Wendell rather is a part of Adam's world in season 3. So now I'm just trying to figure out where and how that will happen. You have some thoughts? All right, great. All right, awesome. Michael, take care, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, take care, Michael. Nice talking
to you. Take care, guys.
He's such a good guy.
I love Michael Patterson.
It's really, and he's be so intense.
He's intensely kind. He's just oozing kindness from his pores all the time.
You don't think there's a little bit of he might explode at any second? He's pretty intense guy. Anyway, thank you very much, Michael, for being our first guest. I think we did a good first episode, right?
I think so, but.
Well, okay, here's
my
the
bar
news.
Is pretty low.
We know we couldn't lose any listeners.
That's true.
Because we're starting at zero.
Right.
Right? So
nowhere to go but up.
So, okay, so if you listened to this episode and liked it, great. Well, season two, I don't even know what the hell I am. episode 2, we're going to try to release episodes on every Wednesday, and you can find the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. You can go to thespianseries.com. You can go to YouTube/thespianseries. If you liked this first episode, please continue to support us. And if you didn't, why don't you email us at thespianseries@gmail.com and just say, hey, I thought that really sucked, but here's what I think you could do better for your next episode. Okay, right?
And
you just gave me a look like you're like now afraid that we're going to get those emails.
Well,
which
I just have that image in my head and of me crying and reading the email.
All right, so we'll see you.
Thanks for listening.
Take care. Have a good week. Check out the show and All right, we'll see you.
Bye.
Are you a filmmaker working on your own indie project and would like to be on the podcast? Email thespianseries@gmail.com. And don't forget to tell your friends about the web series Thespian and this podcast. Married with Web Series is available wherever you go to find your favorite shows.